Spirit Blade Underground, July 24th, 2009.
Warning, access restricted. Enter password. DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome.
Spirit Blade Underground, July 24th, 2009.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the 100th episode of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. I'm Peter France, and the creator of Spirit Blade Productions. We're bringing you Christian sci-fi and fantasy that's unsterilized, unsafe, and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and grab lots of cool downloads over at www.spiritblade.net. As I said, this is the 100th episode of the podcast, so I'm so glad that you're here joining me. We're going to feature today some, what I think of as, I guess, definitive moments of the last 99 episodes. If you're new to the show, this episode will give you an idea of what kind of stuff you'll run into here, and if you're a longtime fan, I hope you'll enjoy some of the moments I most remember from the last 2 years, and a few that I would definitely like to forget. And near the end of the show today, I will be revealing a bit of a secret about this podcast that I've been keeping for some time now. Can you guess what it is? Well, you've got a little bit of time to figure it out. First up today, I counted it up, I've interviewed 17 people, which sounds like a lot to me, but, you know, we don't have interviews every episode here, but I've had the privilege of talking to authors, actors, and fellow philosophers. Here's a sample of the kind of stuff we talked about.
There was like a little graphic novel, like prelude thing, it was like 8 pages long to his novel Saint, that actually made it into my comic and made it into a bunch of other ones, and they and it actually was issued with his novel Saint, but then a lot of the Christian stores pulled it out because they said it was too violent. So it's actually almost a collector's thing now. So yeah, if anybody has it, they should definitely hang on to it.
But, there's the rub, yeah. Isn't it? You know, trying to produce some cool stuff for the Christian market. Those Christians.
Yeah. Melissa Van Slyke, who just moments ago finished all of her recording for the role of the High Priestess in Dark Ritual. Thanks for doing this, Melissa.
You're welcome.
Now, tell everybody a little bit about kind of what your performing background is, because I know you're a singer and an actress, and you're just kind of, you know, multi-talented. So kind of what kind of performing stuff are you used to doing or typically is in your background?
Well, I'm a singer, and I'm an actress, and I'm multi-talented.
Is there any reason, and you could be honest with me about this one, is there any reason other than doing a favor for me that that you've decided to do Dark Ritual and do this role?
No.
All right.
No.
I wasn't familiar with the medium until I started to read the script, and I realized, oh my gosh, there's a lot of words.
Yeah, that's a lot of
that's
words.
That's all we got, folks. That and some noises.
There we go. I don't know, it was easier to do Victor. Victor, who am I doing? It was easier to do Vincent this time.
Hello.
Tully, what's up?
And that's where we ran into each other.
That's right. I believe it was at we ran into each other at a local Catholic church, 8th grade dance, where we were scoping out some possible.
There was a time in the rehearsal when in the script it was a little like a colloquialism that I'd gotten wrong my whole life. I think it was case in point. Yes, case in point. And I wrote point and case. And I don't know why, because I'm a moron. And like, at one point in rehearsal, I remember you were so controlled and being so polite, but you said to Mickey, you know, and I was standing next to you, do you really want me to say point and case? And I remember, like, in the tone of your voice, I was like, suddenly my heart just kind of dropped, and I was like, oh crap, that's not how that phrase goes, is it? It's not point and case at all. And he was like, wouldn't you rather I say case in point, you know? And 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 like Mickey kind of looked at me with this look that said, please go along with this, Pater, you know, because he was always trying to really respect the material and stuff like that. And he was like, just a look that said, please go along with this, Pater, you moron, because you didn't get this right. Gosh.
Well, it's funny because had you and I been alone by ourselves, I would have been like, Pater, you moron. It's supposed to be this.
So I'm talking to Stephen Weiss, creator of Fans for Christ, author of God Loves the Freaks, and cast member of the new Star Trek movie coming out this summer.
Yeah, they took all of our stuff too, like our cell phones and anything we had, you know, they just put it all in this locker.
Did they do any cavity searches?
No.
Now, were you doing second unit stuff, or did you ever see J.J. Abrams on the set?
Oh yeah, I was there with Spock, Kirk, and McCoy.
Okay, cool. Now, what?
I remember I was standing next to Zachary Quinto, and I was trying not to freak him out, but I was checking his ears out because they looked so weird.
Human nature is brought up a lot in Watchmen. We were just talking a second ago about when Night Owl says, what's happened in the American dream? And the comedian says, it came true, you're looking at it. What do you think of when you think of the American dream and how generally we define the American dream?
Well, a lot of people would say life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that's a very theoretical type of a statement. And so just practically how that plays out, a lot of people I think would assume materialism, would assume just anything that makes me happy within the moment. Liberty being defined as being able to do what I want. The pursuit of happiness, being able to say I can do what I want when I want it, whatever makes me happy and feels good in that moment.
Yeah.
And so when the comedian says this, and all around him is chaos, is because people are doing what they want. Yeah. And if everyone is doing what they want in that moment and basing all of their decisions around that feeling in that moment, it becomes chaos and anarchy. Yeah.
I often do reviews of movies and TV shows and whatnot and try to talk about both the artistic quality and the relevance that they each have for the truly important issues that we deal with in life. Movies and TV shows, I think, are a great tool to kind of springboard off of and have meaningful conversation, and they occasionally provide fuel for a geeky rant. Disclaimer. I tend to let myself go off the deep end once in a while with my opinions and reviews because it makes for more interesting listening. But for one-on-one conversation, I'm a firm supporter of emotional restraint and cool-headed conversation to facilitate the exchange of ideas. Today, I'm reviewing The Golden Compass, the movie that is kind of causing a little bit of controversy right now, at least among kind of conservatives and Christians and things like that. So the philosophical rant in this film is against organized religion that values obedience to church leaders over examination of evidence and seeking out absolute truth. And Christians should agree that placing obedience to church leadership over and above examination and obedience to Scripture is wrong. In fact, though I'm sure it was not intended, I saw a great opportunity for comparing the Golden Compass, which in the movie is a device used as the ultimate source of truth. I saw a great opportunity for comparing the Golden Compass to the Bible as an ultimate resource for discovering the truth of the universe and how it works and what our role is and what we're supposed to do with our lives. In fact, I think some Christians have a responsibility to watch this film. Not all, but some. There's certainly no need, this is just a little aside here, there's certainly no need to freaking protest this film, especially if your goal is to keep people from seeing it. I don't think trying to keep people from seeing it is going to fix whatever problem you might see coming out of this movie. In any case, if you protest it, it's only going to breed, you know, controversy breeds interest. Haven't you thought about seeing this movie now since the controversy is kind of boiled and bubbled and stuff like that? So leave your picket signs and email campaigns as ideas in your own head, please. The only thing you're going to accomplish is a confirmation for others that Christians are closed-minded, ignorant, and judgmental idiots. Now, the more productive approach, I think, is to see this movie and talk about it. Let's not be afraid to engage in conversation, you know, to express our ideas, share our thoughts, learn from each other, and search out truth. Discern. Take time to discern. Read up on things and discern truth from falsehood. Head 6 and Baltar 6 never resolved. You know, I thought they were going to, because suddenly Caprica 6 and Baltar could both see each other's, you know, head trips or whatever they are, but they never did anything with it. What the crap? And hello, Kara's corpse You know, what was Kara? I mean, I know she kind of disappeared like a ninja at the end, but that didn't make any sense. So what was she, an angel or something? You know, maybe that's what the producers are into. They're like, we don't want to answer questions. Let's just be really cool and postmodern and not give them any answers and just leave people with the questions. Because isn't it more profound that way? No, it's not more profound that way. It's nonsensical that way, okay? Answer the question. What the heck? What's up with Kara? Stupid. Thematically, this movie looks at one key issue that is vital for everyone to examine, I think. The role of emotions. Does the movie tackle it successfully? Does it give us the right answer, or point us in the right direction at least? No. What starts as an interesting setup for discussing the role of emotions in our lives finally comes to a stupidly simplistic close as one key character says to another, "Set aside logic, do what feels right." Do what feels right. Not just do what feels right, because we hear that all the time. Follow your heart, do what you feel is right. Da, da, da. Not only that, set aside logic and do what feels right. The character who said this, I'm going to try and be spoiler-free as possible. The character who said this is a fan favorite, and the scene is written as one character passing on wisdom to the younger generation. So this is the voice of the writers here saying what they think is the right thing to say in this instance. That's how the person who's saying it and the way the scene is being played, that's what this is about. It's about passing on wisdom to the next generation, and this is the voice of the writers here saying what they think is the right thing to say in this instance. I've never in any movie seen this idea so clearly stated, you know, this idea of set aside logic, do what feels right. And upon hearing it, I couldn't help but mutter a good grief that hopefully only my wife heard. I hate it when people talk during movies, so I do feel a little bit guilty. Why do we have to polarize our views of logic and emotion so much? Biblically, there's place for both, but we so often kill one and uphold the other. Unfortunately, our hearts are often wrong, or even tell us to do things that are harmful to ourselves or others. We have conflict all over the world because we are all doing what feels right. Emotions are wonderful things, but they are a terrible compass for decision making. Use of language itself requires logic, so logic has to be used to even say, do what your heart tells you. Otherwise, opiahuas legic 98729 oops. What happened? Well, I stopped incorporating logic into my communication. Logic and reason are used to discern reality and truth. Emotions are meant to be a response to what is true, not a determiner or a discerner of truth, but a response to truth. All right, Legend of the Seeker. Now, two bits of dialogue and jumped out at me last week while watching the most recent episode of Legend of the Seeker. Since the concept of the show and books lends itself to asking truth-oriented philosophical questions, I came up with a couple for last night's show. Kaylin says, "You can't ask me to change my beliefs," to Richard. And Richard says, "And you can't ask me to change mine." Now, in the show, a baby's life hung in the balance during this conversation, and the argument hit a stalemate at this point as they both surrendered themselves to this overly sensitive mentality. Why can we not ask each other to change our beliefs? I agree that we can't demand that someone change their beliefs, but why can we not ask someone, in light of good evidence and solid reasoning, to change their belief on an issue? I mean, you know, if someone asks me that, I can always say no, right? What's the harm in asking if the request is accompanied by good reasoning? Well, in this episode, good reasoning didn't seem to be a weapon in anyone's arsenal. Richard wasn't acknowledging the potential problems with his opinion, and Kaylin seemed to think that tradition was reason enough to hold on to hers. I suppose if we never talk about the reasons for our beliefs, it would be counterproductive to ask someone to change their mind, but is there any reason to avoid a discussion like that outside of the obvious difficulty of keeping cool and exercising emotional self-control? Maybe we've forgotten that emotional self-control is a virtue. I mean, we keep hearing that we should just follow our hearts anyway, right? Maybe that means we should follow our emotions. We seem to be living in a time when emotions trump all else. Now, make no mistake, I'm a very emotional guy, if you can't tell from the way I'm expressing this right now. I cry at the end of The Iron Giant and Frequency and Big Fish every time I see those movies. But emotions can't be the guiding elements when we're trying to determine what's true and what isn't. Emotions are our response to reality, not what teaches us reality, and we should be able to control our emotions and have a good dialogue with each other that's not emotionally charged, right? Can we agree on that? Okay, back to my emotionally charged rant. Zed, in trying to explain why a baby must die, said to Richard, "Evil is in its nature." It's meaning the baby, right? Richard responded saying, "Well, it's not in mine." "Oh, really, Richard?" There's no evil in your nature, no selfishness, no tendency to serve yourself before others, ever. Being less than good, which is the opposite of evil, all the time, never comes naturally to you. Well, wow, I guess you must be perfect then. Unless your definition of evil only includes murder, sadism, rape, stealing, hatred, you know, all the really bad stuff. Maybe you just have the have kinda evil in your nature. I can't believe they gave this guy the Sword of Truth. My favorite TV show ever has got to be Farscape. Why? Because it turned the genre on its ear. For decades, Gene Roddenberry's philosophy on how to do science fiction was the only option. Don't get me wrong, I was a fan of Star Trek The Next Generation and all the Star Trek shows after that, except for Enterprise, which sucked. But I mean, it was all that we had, you know, and it was good at the time, and I really enjoyed it. I could talk about some of my favorite Next Generation episodes. I was a geek for Next Generation, so don't get me wrong, I really loved Star Trek in its day. But suddenly, when we could break out of a concept-driven story, which means Alien of the Week or Singularity of the Week or whatever the new concept is, this removed kind of examination of concepts, and instead jump into character-driven stories where people are mad and flawed and broken and hurt and mending relationships and trying to figure things out, and in the midst of all that, you got aliens that aren't like just people with like clay or, you know, Play-Doh on their face, you know? Holy cow, you got like Jim Henson's Creature Shop doing the creatures, so suddenly you're way out of the norm of either like a humanoid character or just a CGI thing. You've got these whacked out, very tangible, the actors are touching them and interacting with them. Okay, so they don't articulate in the same way as maybe a CGI thing does, but you can at least look at it and say, that's real, that's there. If I was there, I could touch it. I just prefer complicated puppetry over CGI because it's there, it's real, you know? It ages, I think, a whole lot better than CGI. So, for so many reasons that it just turned the genre on its ear, Farscape is the ultimate television show. I'm a huge fan of comics, almost exclusively DC and especially Green Lantern, and while I often have good things to say about the comics I'm reading, a few times over the last couple years, it's been a little rough for me as a comics fan, and here's why. Disclaimer. I tend to let myself go off the deep end once in a while with my opinions and reviews because it makes for more interesting listening. But for one-on-one conversation, I'm a firm supporter of emotional restraint and cool-headed conversation to facilitate the exchange of ideas. The Flash. But it's just fallen flat on its face, in my opinion. And it's not because, hear me loud and clear, it is not because he's got kids and a family and stuff like that. I was in support of the idea that that a superhero can have a family and still be really cool. What's not working for me, maybe it's just the way it's written, I don't know, but what's not working for me is the fact that his kids are superheroes and they're out there fighting crime with him. What I would have much rather they had done is to tell a Flash story where his kids are at home, powered or not, I don't care, but his kids are at home and he's balancing family life and the commitments that he has to real family issues with being a superhero. I feel like this is not a real family that's being represented here. It's just so far out, the concepts they're doing here, that it's not grounded enough in reality for me. I know, just to be saying about a comic book, you know, it's not grounded enough in reality for me. I know. But that's just how I feel about it, and that's where I stand on the issue. It's showcasing a Spectre story, and in it we see a cruel, remorseless murderer kill someone in cold blood with a smirk on his face. The Spectre shows up and deals out vengeance. He kills the murderer. Instead of going to hell or facing any real form of punishment other than the brief discomfort of death, this guy just kind of hangs around. Why? Because he says he's an atheist, and so he has, quote, nowhere to go. Okay, fine. But the grounding of the Spectre as a character is based on the absolute monotheistic concepts of the Bible, or at least the Old Testament. The Spectre is supposed to be unstoppable. But now, some sick jerk who has no value for human life can look at the Spectre and essentially pout, "I don't believe in you, go away," and like he's off the hook? This seems ridiculous to me. I mean, why even bother writing stories about the Spectre if it's that easy to avoid the justice that he brings? We're at Final Crisis. Oh, boy. As if Morrison's writing wasn't confusing and directionless enough. I mean, maybe he is a genius, and in the end, this will all be a great read. But a word to DC. Keep Grant Morrison on graphic novels, not monthlies. If I can't read his story arcs in one sitting, I'm afraid his genius is confused with the phone book in my small, small brain, okay? They both seem to carry the same amount of purpose in their plots at this point. All right, Justice League of America. His Red Tornado story was interesting. I actually liked it. It was a little bit risky because he is kind of third-tier character. But focusing an entire story arc on Vixen and Animal Man was way off target. I just did not find that story or those characters interesting. I kept wondering when the big guns were coming back, you know? I don't understand why everyone is so in love with the Wade Ross Kingdom Come story. I've got it. I enjoyed it. It was painted cool. The writing was good too, but do we have to keep worshiping it by revisiting it over and over again like it's the best, you know, story in DC Comics history? I still think it was a major bonehead decision to kill Pa Kent. I think they're going to regret that. I think it's good for like a shocker and kind of an event, you know? But I think Superman, you know, Kal-El, Clark Kent, he is grounded in his parents and in that whole model of, you know, of parents that he gets along with, that in his adult life he's really close to, you know, that he doesn't have any like daddy or mommy issues like just about every other superhero does. When is Superman going to be the last son of Krypton again? I was all in favor of the 1985, you know, clean slate where they killed Supergirl, they killed super everything except for Superman, and so he was unique, you know. But now we got Super Dog and maybe Super Cat and who knows, super everything, you know, with new Krypton. I'm also waiting for the other shoe to drop. This is Judd Winnick. He's got two pet causes, homosexuality awareness and HIV/AIDS awareness. And I want to say I admire his compassion for both homosexuals and those with HIV or AIDS. But these elements have become such predictable elements in his writing that I'm now waiting to find out who's going to be gay or have HIV. I've seen both of these elements, gay characters and HIV, handled by other writers without the heavy-handedness that Winnick uses. It's obviously close to his heart. I know a little bit about his history, and he lost a friend who was a homosexual and who contracted AIDS. He lost his friend to the disease, and you know, so I feel for him, and I as I said, I admire his compassion. But he doesn't seem to be learning from the other writers that handle these issues with more subtlety. And the result can be a pretty significant detour from the kind of stories I buy comics for. So I'm in Final Crisis sucks. If this series is any indication of what more crisis crossovers would be like, I'm glad we're calling this one the final one, right? After a confusing 7-issue arc, I sat down and read all 7 comics back to back to see if the story made any more sense. Not really. This is possibly the most self-indulgent comic book story I have ever read. Grant Morrison juggles a ton of characters that are either obscure, even to a real DC fanatic like me, or brand new without any explanation or reminder of who they are and where they came from and why we should care. I mean, the only way to make sense of this series would be to get a list of every DC comic book Grant Morrison has ever read and study them so that we can know what he obviously thinks we should know about all these Z-list characters. This was actually confirmed in an article I read just yesterday, or no, it was today, came out yesterday though, in Wizard Magazine. They interviewed Grant Morrison, and they talked about what he did for research, and he said he goes through his old comic book collection. Holy crap! The comic books he was reading in the 70s and 80s. Well, if that's the way he does his research, just on the stuff he collected in the 70s and 80s, no wonder the whole story was whacked. Okay, Kalibak is a talking tiger, the Atomic Knights are riding around on giant Dalmatians, and freaking Captain Carrot? What? With the presence of Geoff Johns, it's become really cool recently to take outdated, once goofy character concepts and make them cool again. But guess what? Not everybody can do that well, and not every concept can be made cool. This story was a mess from beginning to end, and maybe those involved convinced themselves that people would dig it because it's confusing in a profound, postmodern kind of way. But you know what? They should have asked the readers after 2 or 3 issues and trusted the people putting down their money for this stuff. I will always love Morrison's incredible JLA run. Nothing's going to change that. But he is now on my poop list. And Dan Didio, or Didio, however you pronounce that, he's the head honcho at DC, he should have vetoed this crazy smear of nonsense. So he's on the list too. Countdown, Batman RIP, and now Final Crisis. That's three strikes, Danny boy. Time to get a new job. DiDio is kind of like a ball of energy dedicated to living in denial of negative feedback. I mean, that's, I hereby put DC on notice. DiDio either gets a new job or openly apologizes and acknowledges his bad instincts for the last 2 years. Because, you know, I'd be willing to forgive him. Just acknowledge that, okay? Everybody makes kind of a bad mistake. Let's move forward. It's all about grace and forgiveness here. So let's just move forward and have a fresh start. But until he repents, and that happens... DC crossovers and big events at DC will be trade paperback purchases at best for me, and that's only if I read consistently good reviews of them. And now I close this time of ranting on Final Crisis with words designed to express the utter outrage and frustration I feel that those closest to me will understand the magnitude of. I wonder what Marvel is up to. Okay, now despite, I've got to say, despite the clips I've been playing, I am not a weekly ranter. But every once in a while, there is an issue that pops up for which I indulge my desire to explode. Disclaimer. I tend to let myself go off a deep end once in a while with my opinions and reviews because it makes for more interesting listening. But for one-on-one conversation, I'm a firm supporter of emotional restraints and cool-headed conversation to facilitate the exchange of ideas. Hopefully, they also won't have any, in the live-action Dragon Ball movie. Can someone explain that to me? Can someone explain why when they take Japanese animation and they have English-speaking rational people dubbing the voice in, that they feel this need to... Because I understand that maybe in the Japanese culture, again, I'm not familiar with the Japanese culture, so I don't know. Maybe in the Japanese culture, they do things like, or... aw, when clearly, you know, in American culture, we don't need those noises. They're just kind of odd. But if that is a part of the Japanese culture, why do we keep that when we're bringing it over for English-speaking audiences? I mean, is it a purist thing? I mean, it doesn't mean anything to English-speaking people. It's just weird. It's weird. When do you do that in your... That's my favorite one. Why? Why? I have no idea. It drives me nuts. Yeah. And I'm just so sick of Peter Petrelli, so I just want him to lose his powers and be off to the side. I'm just tired of him. Heroes Matt Parkman, strayed from the likable everyman that I love him for so much, to cookie-cutter spiritual guru, or at least his writers did. While trying to convince the speedster chick, I can't remember her name, that she needed his help, he said, "Forget your thoughts. What is your heart telling you to do?" Ugh. How many times do we all need to hear this slogan before we actually realize how insanely stupid it is? I mean, it sounds really nice and it feels right, doesn't it? Well, of course it feels right to follow my heart. If following my heart means suspending rational thinking, the only thing left is emotion. So what does that leave you with? Do what feels good, right? But how can this be universally good advice when some people feel good about shooting their parents or beating up their wives? I mean, we hear this idea all over the place. We heard it in Iron Man. I read it in comic books all the time. Just put a little red flag in your head and listen for the phrase "follow your heart" or some iteration of that phrase. You will be amazed at how often it shows up in popular culture, whether it be celebrities or people on TV or in fictional contexts like comic books, novels, movies, TV. Just listen for it. You'll be amazed how often it shows up. If we break this statement down, it means do what gives you immediately pleasurable emotions or experiences, right? Follow your heart. How can any marriage last given that philosophy? How can anyone be disciplined in anything following that kind of advice? Is following my heart good when my heart wants to be selfish and think of me first? Because that's what my heart wants. You know, we use this slogan because it feels good. And when writers are telling a story, they want their audience to enjoy it and feel good. I'm a writer. I understand that too. But we can't take this philosophy and apply it to life. Now, don't get me wrong. We shouldn't abuse and neglect ourselves. But to place follow your heart above rational, careful, and reasoned decision-making, even when you aren't sure what to do, is a solid way to screw up your life. As the podcast has moved forward, I've relaxed a little bit more behind the microphone, and as a result, I've found that a few bits of my personal life have leaked out into your ears, and hopefully that hasn't scared you off. After I had foolishly declined having the bottom cut, so I took two hammers, two saws, and a flathead screwdriver into the backyard with this tree, where I mercilessly beat and hacked at the bottom of this tree until I was able to finally re-expose the bottom. It looked freaking mutilated on the bottom there. It was just, yeah, I was mad at that tree, and it felt so good when I would slam that flathead screwdriver in there, just hammer at the handle of the flathead and hear the wood crack inside. I'm like, yeah, that's right, that's what you get. I think my favorite word is crap. I use crap in a bunch of different ways. Crap, crappity, crapper, crap, crapalicious. I mean, crap. I just love crap. I don't love crap. I just like saying the word crap.
Isn't it you who had that really bad boil?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, did I tell you about that?
Yeah.
I remember when it happened. You told it. You told us.
I didn't show
it.
You that.
No, I don't think so. You told us.
It was like right on the top of my butt crack. And Corinne, in fact, this just came up with my sister. I don't know why. Like, just a few days ago. But, yeah, she was like calling me a big weenie, but, oh, my gosh, I went blind. I mean,
it weenies, was... Don't you land
well, I was sitting on the toilet, and this is going to be on the website sometime, but I was sitting...
Are you really boring?
But I was sitting on the toilet, and this thing was throbbing and stuff like that, and I was getting ready to get in the bath.
Did you know it was there?
Yeah. Uh-oh. I called, like, urgent care, and I kept this thing on my butts, right at the base of my tailbone. And it's really throbbing. I mean, I was up the night before asking God to kill me. I mean, it was bad.
Why didn't you just lance it yourself?
I didn't know. I was a weenie, I guess. I was scared. Yeah. I didn't know you were supposed to do that or whatever.
Right.
So I called her and
how big
day.
Was it?
I'm trying to think. It was probably about...
A thumb?
Probably not as big as a thumb. Maybe about as big as like the top of the top joint of the index finger.
Right.
But it was in a bad place, man. That's awesome. And so I was in the bathroom on the toilet, you know, taking a crap before I was going to get in the bath. I was drawing a bath at the same time. And then as I was going back to the bathroom, I looked down in the toilet, and there was this cloud of blood just growing inside the bowl. And I was like, I had this nightmare that, like, but it seems like I've seen in a movie or something when somebody had, like, pushed so hard that, like, their guts came out of their intestines.
Well, it's like that movie we saw, Dreamcatcher. Remember where the thing was in the toilet and jumped up that dude? But he...
I don't remember that.
Oh.
Holy crap. But yeah, I thought, oh my gosh, I pushed too hard and my intestines fell out and I'm going to die, you know. Just all this... I mean, when you see blood flying over the toilet, that's scary. So I, like, got up, and I don't even remember if I wiped myself or not. I just got up and, someone had gone to get Advil or ibuprofen or something like that. Mom had gone to get ibuprofen. And I came out of the doorway, creeped, you know, just creeped around the corner. And I was like, Corinne, you know, and I pulled out my pants by this time. And my, you know, younger sister, Corinne, was there. And I said, Corinne, and she's like, are you okay? You want some help? And I said, I can't see. Can you lead me to the piano bench?
So why the piano bench?
Because it was the nearest thing that I could, like, I don't know. I lost my mind. So she came over, and she was helping me over, and I didn't even make it to the piano bench. I said, okay, I'm just going to stop here. And I just laid down on the floor close to the piano bench. And then Mom came in, and... I got the Motrin IV, and I said, we're way past Motrin, Mom. And so my dad took me to urgent care. I was perched on one buttock the whole time, and I got in there, and, you know, and they said, well, we got two options. You know, one is to just lance it, and
well, wasn't it already done being lanced? Cause
it had opened up a little bit.
Oh.
And then the other option was to put numbing stuff on it first. And I was like, well, why would I not take the numbing stuff? He said, well, it's already opened up, and so the numbing stuff would probably just sting quite a bit, you know, and there'd just be some extra pain beforehand, you know, and it might not help. You know? I'm like, oh, crap. I said, well, all right, I guess just cut it open, you know. And so he gives me this, rolls up this gauze. He says, here you go. I said, what do I do with this? Bite down on it. So I was like, oh, crap, what did I got myself into? So he had me, you know, roll over, and, you know, I had this gauze in my mouth, and he said, all right, I'm going to count down from 10, and then we're going to cut it. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And he cut it. And then...
Was your dad in there, too?
I don't remember if he was or not. Man. And then I felt this really pulsing pain. I was like, oh, what are you doing? And he's like, it looks like he's, like, you know, kneading bread back there. And he's like, oh, I gotta squeeze the pus out.
So there's, like, pus and...
Yeah.
Oh, that was bad.
And then, of course, I felt like even a bigger weenie at the end when he was like, well, you are a real trooper. Good job. Like, ah, crap. When someone calls you a trooper, you know you've been a weenie.
Now, every once in a great while, something will appear on this show that just kind of defies categorization. These little oddities are few and far between, but... well, actually, maybe that's probably a good thing.
Pater, Pater, I'm leaving you a note. I hope when you play it, you get in your boat and row across the sea of the web. I'm going to try this again. I'll call you right back. Daily manna from the net. I hope that manna is not wet. Actually, I do kind of hope that it has some wetness, you know, moisture for the body to get through the desert. I'm leaving a message for your podcast, and then I will tell you that I had a blast recording my message after the beep. Hey, everybody. I just bought a Jeep. It's a four-wheel drive, cause I'm going through some snow. Up and down some mountains, I'm putting on a show. And then I'll go back home and warm myself by the fire. I'm calling for Pater's podcast. Calling for Pater's podcast. Podcast. Calling for Pater's podcast. Yes, I'd like to order a large pepperoni pizza. And go ahead and hold the pepperoni. Extra cheese on that, and I've got a coupon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye now.
Hi, Corinne.
Hi, Corinne.
I'm here with some friends to wish you a happy birthday. Ready, guys?
Yeah. All right.
Happy birthday.
We're here for you today.
To wish you happy birthday.
But in a special way.
When it comes to birthdays, we hope...
Hey, guys.
No, Bruno, stop!
No! It's okay, Pater. I know what you have to do now.
I love you, Bruno.
I know that, Pater. I've always loved you.
Happy birthday, Corinne. A central part of this podcast, and one of the chief reasons I decided to create it to begin with, is my desire to seek out truth regarding the big issues in life. Who are we? Who are we created to be? Who is God? What does He want from me? What is the purpose of life, and how can I pursue it most effectively? The more I examine the evidence, the more I compare it to the alternatives, the more the Bible stands out as the most reliable source for answers to all of these questions and a ton more. So every week I study as best I can and try to share the essence of biblical text, chapter by chapter and verse by verse. It's been a very rewarding journey for me so far, and I hope you guys will continue to travel and grow with me in the future. In high school, I often thought that I could debate someone into belief. I had my arguments down to a science, and at lunchtime a circle would sometimes develop around me as I debated multiple students at once. And, you know, even though I successfully defeated every argument presented, my opponents, I put that in quotes because they shouldn't have been seen that way, walked away frustrated with me. I mean, we listened to each other only enough to formulate our next clever response, and they didn't hear the truth I was presenting, and I didn't learn anything more about where they were coming from. And I wish so much that I could go back in time and show more love and invest more time and interest in just one of them, rather than waste my time poisoning many of them against the truth. And we're going to look at this whole phenomenon of Bible thumpers on street corners and building bombers. First of all, I'll say I am really tired of these guys. Combating this image of Christianity is a lot of what Spirit Blade Productions is about.
A friend of mine the other day, and he said something interesting that I really agree with, and that is he said that he thought that a whole new breed of Christian is rising up that is really exploring the Word and re-examining it and taking all the churchiness kind of out of the box and re-examining all the pieces and putting it back together using just the stuff that's really biblical and all these tendencies toward legalism that you're talking about really, I think, result from not from Scripture, obviously. You know, you and I know that. Just take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 8, and you get a sense, you know, of how we can view some of these fan fiction and, you know, just different kinds of sci-fi and fantasy and whatnot. My thought there is that, you know, that's what's going to have to happen if the message of Christ and the truth of Scripture is really going to be valued and put out there. I think there's going to have to be a whole new breed of Christians that are willing to say, no, let's really look and see what the text says and not just rely on tradition and these kind of rules of etiquette and social, you know, morality, you know.
Does God change? We're looking at Acts chapter 5 in our search for truth today. Is God more forgiving in the New Testament than he is in the Old Testament? Well, the Bible clearly tells us that God's nature does not change. You can see that in Numbers 23:19, 1 Samuel 15:29, and James 1:17, just three examples from both the Old and New Testament. Organized religion. This week, we're searching for truth in the book of Acts, chapter 6. The phrase organized religion already has a negative connotation to many ears. Organized religious entities have certainly done their part over the years to earn the red flag that the term now sends up. But is the concept by nature corrupt? Well, Scripture shows us that this is not the case. In this chapter of Acts, we see that the early church was doing something very good. An account that's attributed to H.L. Hastings reads, "When a French monarch proposed the persecution of Christians in his dominion, an old statesman and warrior said to him, 'Sire, the Church of God is an anvil that has worn out many hammers.' So the hammers of infidels have been pecking away at this book for ages, but the hammers are worn out and the anvil still endures. If this book had not been the book of God, men would have destroyed it long ago. Emperors and popes, kings and priests, princes and rulers have all tried their hand at it. They die, and the book still lives." Leads to this week's vocab roundup. The first word, apostle, we've come across this one before. Jesus chose to call his 12 close disciples apostles. You see that in Luke 6:13, which means one sent, or ambassador. It was a distinctive word not used much in the classical Greek language, and so it functioned well as an official title. This term was primarily reserved for those who actually encountered and were sent out by Christ after his resurrection. They represented him and spoke on his behalf, and so had a unique authority in the New Testament time period. Grace. Often when I think of the word grace, I think of like ballet dancers or ice skaters, you know. And although throughout the Bible this word has a variety of specific meanings, in general, in the Bible, it means undeserved favor. Grace is something good given without being earned. If we have anything good that we enjoy in life, your love of comic books or art or music or the mountains or whatever it might be, whether or not we are Christians, it is ultimately because of the grace of God. We didn't earn it, but God has given it to us because he loves us. And that goes all the way down from indoor plumbing to all the way up to salvation and a restored relationship with God through Jesus Christ. That is grace. It's favor that God has given us that that we didn't earn. We don't deserve it. In verse 16, we're commanded to live or walk, it may say in your Bible, in the Spirit, which sounds kind of deep, doesn't it? You know, and this isn't just any spirit or our own spirit. We're not commanded to just kind of, you know, be spiritual and just walk in a spiritual way. Now, the Greek here indicates that Paul means the Holy Spirit, God himself. So we might look at verse 16 and say, wow, okay, how do I figure out how to live in the Spirit? What in the world, you know? Although our relationship with the Holy Spirit is an incredible mystery, we can be thankful here that God gives us some guidelines to help us kind of determine whether we're living in the Spirit or not. I don't think it's an exhaustive, you know, list of indicators and stuff like that, but it's just some helpful direction to determine whether we're living more according to our flesh or more according to the Spirit. Speaking of flesh, the NASB, New American Standard Bible translation in verse 14 says that we are to, quote, admonish the unruly. Now, the Greek word here for unruly means to be disorderly or lazy. Although we got to be tactful and sensitive in our approach, we should be willing to sometimes, you know, do the hard thing and warn a fellow Christian about the effects of a disorderly or lazy lifestyle if we see that pattern in them. Of course, always done in love out of a genuine concern for the consequences of living their life that way. There's just a lot of stuff here, so I would feel kind of like I was betraying the text and betraying the purpose of the podcast if I just kind of glossed over some stuff. So I hope you'll bear with me. I want to encourage you, go every Monday to, or at least before you listen to the podcast, to spiritblade.typepad.com, see which section the podcast is going to be covering in the In Search of Truth post, and just give it a read right before the podcast, because otherwise, as I've said many times before, you're just listening to a dude who tries to do his homework and share truth with you guys, but a dude nonetheless.
and you're missing out on the words of God. Let's pick apart verse 10 a little bit, because there's room for this verse to be misunderstood, I think. It also helps to set the context for the upcoming verses. Now, the Greek word used for exhort here is parakaleo. This word is stronger than a request, but it's less than a command. We might say that Paul is urging his readers toward different behavior. He wants them to agree. More literally, this idea of agreeing would be translated, speak the same thing. That determines conduct. So, blah, 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 blah. What does all that mean? Well, if we take all these puzzle pieces and put them back together again, we can come to a few conclusions about what this verse is telling us.
Salvation,
different types of salvation. So a quick vocab review, because these are lots of churchy words I'm throwing at you. Just a quick vocab review with little bite-sized definitions. Justification, right? That's being considered perfect by God, cleared of all charges and saved from the penalty of hell. This takes place instantly. It's an instant event. It takes place at the time that you choose to put your trust in Christ, in who he is, and in what he did to pay the penalty for your sins on the cross. Okay, that's justification, is being saved from punishment and from hell. Sanctification, being both set apart for and declared appropriate for carrying out the purposes of God. And that's an ongoing daily process. More and more, as you're being sanctified, your life is being set apart and dedicated to the purposes of God. And not only that, but in the meantime, God is saying, yeah, you are the right fit for this. You are the right person that I want to do this. I am sanctifying you. I'm setting you apart and specializing you for my purposes. Glorification, that's being remade perfect in every way, no longer having the tendency to sin. And this comes after our current life on earth. No one here has been glorified yet. Can you be a Christian and enjoy games like Dungeons and Dragons, Magic the Gathering? Can you enjoy bizarre sci-fi and fantasy films and books that have magic and sorcery and stuff like that in them? Can you enjoy those forms of fiction and still be a Christian of integrity today? And I think that Christians need to, when they look at Dungeons and Dragons or any role-playing game or Harry Potter, whatever it is, Christians, we need to look at these things ourselves. We can't just follow some Christian organization or some book out there that's sold in a Christian bookstore and say, oh, because they're a Christian and they're published, you know, then we should trust them, you know. So my conclusions based on 1 Corinthians chapter 8 and some of these other verses is that science fiction and fantasy entertainment is fine, provided the content does not lead you into a philosophy that is counter to scriptural truth. Now, I think the content can be counter to scriptural truth. The key here is that the content not lead you into a philosophy that is counter to scriptural truth. I think 1 Corinthians chapter 8 is one of those chapters that we don't look at enough. But if you are a Christian and you enjoy sci-fi and fantasy, and chances are, if you're listening to this, you are, then you feel like someone does not understand why you can enjoy this stuff, take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 8, study it out for yourself, and then take what you glean from it to the people that that seem to misunderstand your hobbies or your interests, and hopefully God will shed some light on their minds regarding this topic a little bit more.
Oh, Jennifer, don't worry about how you write your comments. I sound like a moron every week on this thing.
Me blah, blah, blah.
Awesome.
Tell us how we can make the podcast and blogs more better. Crap, now I'm having a brain fart. I was doing so good.
Steady beams of the old phasers, you know, bzz, 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 you know, whatever. I know that's a terrible, I almost did the
Close Encounters thing. So that's just a hi to all of you aliens out there. I think that's what that means in alienese. You know, follow my heart. Well, my heart tells me that I almost said follow my fart there, didn't I? Sorry. Okay, little moment off. Okay, now we're serious again. We're serious. Some things I said. Do you disagree with some things I said? I'd love to hear that too. Do you love the show? Do you hate the show? Do you have a freaking pulse, people? I've checked the stats. I know people are listening to this show. I want to hear from you. So, and leave a message for me. Leave a personal message, a review of something, your thoughts on whatever. Or just tell me currently what your pulse rate is. That would be exciting for me, too. Please, people, throw me a freaking bone here. I do want to thank everybody who has written in or ever left a phone message for the show. You guys have really been a key part of this show being what it is and what I want it to be. And I hope to keep hearing from you and even more listeners in the future. And at this point, at the risk of showing partiality, I do want to express special thanks to Mary, a listener who has possibly, I think, called in more often than anyone else. I got another call from her this week. Let's take a listen.
Hello, Peter. This is Mary Husenbaum, and I congratulations on the 100 of the podcast. And I have a question for you. I'm a little bit nervous. I'm a little bit nervous to ask the question. My daughter is not married, but I like you, and I would like for you to marry my daughter. Then you will be my son, and I will be your mother. And I know you already maybe have the mother, but I could be your mother too. I know you will not say yes, probably, because my daughter is not a real person, because I am not a real person, because I am you, because
you have nothing better to do but to leave yourself freaking
voice messages, because no one else will. Or at least that's how it started out. I was probably just fooling myself. I don't know if anybody else, if anybody thought that Mary Husenbaum was a real person, but there you have it. Dear sweet Mary Husenbaum, who has been so nice to call in several times, is actually not a real person. She is actually me calling myself. It first started out because I wasn't getting anybody calling in, and I thought, well, I'm going to just freaking call myself then. If nobody's going to call me, I'm going to call myself. And so I'm just had fun portraying Mary Husenbaum. I always knew that I would eventually, you know, just kind of give up and let everybody know the truth at some point, and I kind of thought the 100th episode would be a fun time to do that. But there you have it. Let's take a listen to her previous calls in a new light. Here you go. Now we've got, I think it's my first phone called in comment. Take a listen.
Hello, Peter. This is Mary Husenbaum, and your show is the bomb, and it is very special to me, and that is all of that.
Well, thanks, Mary. I'm glad you're digging the show. That's it for this week. Next week, I got a couple of listener messages this week. Let's take a listen.
Hello, Peter. This is the Mary Husenbaum, and I like Green Lantern. My son likes the Green Lantern, and I like him as well. Thank you.
Well, Mary, it sounds like, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce your last name. I didn't quite catch it. I'd probably butcher it. But it sounds like you've been listening to the show. You obviously know I'm a Green Lantern fan and probably will continue to be for many, many years. Glad to know that there is another one or two out there. All right, next up.
Hey, Peter, this is...
Hello, Peter. This is Mary Husenbaum. Want you to know that I tell my daughter about your show, and now she listened to your show. So thank you. Thank you.
Hey, Mary, it is always good to hear from you, and thanks for sucking in another listener. Yeah, all right.
Hello, Peter. This is Mary Husenbaum. And this week I read the comic book. I like
the Green Lantern, the Superman, and the like, the Superman. Thank you.
Hey, Mary. Always good to hear from you. Glad you're digging on Superman and Green Lantern. Yeah, I'm liking the World of New Krypton story so far. You know.
Hello, this is Mary Husenbaum. I listen to the Spirit Blood and I like it. I would like to sing the song for you. There's an emptiness inside me. Something more I want to. Bring me to light. Your sacrifice rescue my soul. Thank you.
Hey, Mary, thanks for calling in again. Glad you're digging on Spirit Blade and the songs. Don't feel bad about forgetting the words. Whenever I'm recording, I have the words right in front of me. I don't think I've ever recorded, memorized, ever. Okay, before we finish up, I've got one more little reveal for you guys. I'm a little over halfway finished with my first mix of Spirit Blade Productions' next project, Pilgrim's Progress, Similitude of a Dream. You're about to hear a work in progress, but I do hope that you dig it. I'm not putting this clip on the main website. This is an exclusive preview just for you podcast listeners, so I hope you enjoy.
Halt! Who goes there?
I'm Christopher Pilgrim. I need to get through that gate.
It's not yet sunup, citizen. You should be at home. The gate will be open in a few hours.
No, please,
Hey, you all right?
Christopher!
Master Pilgrim, what is going on here?
Kafan, why did you bring the...
I didn't. With all the noise you made this morning, you woke up some of the disciples.
We're sorry, Master Pilgrim. We were scared. We thought the Overseer could help.
Never mind them, Christopher. Just what do you think you're doing, making all of this fuss?
Overseer... My aim is not to offend anyone, but you must believe me. The Veritas Chronicles warn of a storm of fire coming.
I will not have you uttering that ridiculous, intolerable nonsense as a member of the Circle. You will report to the Inner Chamber immediately for emergency session and penalization.
Guardsmen, please, open the gate.
I cannot do that, sir.
Did you hear me, Christopher? If you do not comply immediately, you may face elimination from both the Circle of Mages
Please.
And the Order itself.
I must get through that gate.
Step back, sir. I will not ask you again.
Christopher, the guard is only doing his duty. This can wait until later.
It cannot wait! I do not wish anyone harm, but neither will I conform to your wishes or expectations of me. And I will pass through that gate. For your own sakes, do not try to stop me.
He's using the whisper!
Kafan, disciples, prepare a shield. Christopher, you can't possibly believe you will defeat all of us.
Gods preserve us. I've never seen power like that.
His lips aren't moving.
That book! The whisper's coming from his book.
Spirits! He'll be killed!
Focus on your work. Reinforce the shield. Concentrate and you will survive.
Wait, he's not targeting us. The gate! Shield the gate!
Thanks so much, you guys, for joining me to celebrate the 100th episode, I can't believe it, of the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. Next week, come back and join me as I give commentary and... See, I actually know what's coming next week. That's a very rare thing. Next week, I'm going to give some commentary and share highlights from the San Diego Comic-Con. Now, as we head out today, we'll take a quick look back at the last 99 episodes and get beat over the head with the one message I hope everyone... walks away with after listening to this show. Here we go.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the monitor room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast. We've finally gotten around to doing this. I should say I have. I've just been thinking about doing a podcast for a while.
Hopefully we'll see you again here next week, but that feels really stupid, just kind of sitting here talking into a microphone, not seeing anybody. So hopefully we will feel you. No, that's creepy. It's done safe and unleashed on your ears and imagination. You can check out what we're doing and doing. I'm sick this week. Yeah, getting off to a rough start. Actually, no, I can't really. I'm just an idiot, and I stumbled over the words there. I've said this thing opening deal a million times now, and I was gonna blame it on my cold that I got last week, but I really, you know, I honestly can't blame it on my cold. I'm just fallible, and I'm not always perfect. All right, that's about it for this week. I'm going to try and wrap this up as quickly as I can because my intro segment was just a disaster and things can only get worse. And so, you know what? I'm just going to say I'm sick, even though I can't blame it on that. I'm going to blame it on it anyway and say I'm sick and goodbye. And I hope you come back next week. And until then, I hope in everything that you're doing, I mean, I say this every week, but this really, I hope, is the way that we are all kind of directing our lives, you know, in search of truth. And we're, crap, you know, I tried to get philosophical there. I really did want to underscore that point because I think it's a good one, obviously, since I say it every freaking week. But you know what, I'll just trust you guys to be seeking the truth. All right, that's it for this week. Thanks so much for stopping by and listening. We'll have more for you next week. Until then, I hope you find encouragement and life and purpose by seeking the truth. Seek the truth. That sounded really lame. Can I say that again? Seek the truth. Yeah, that was better. We'll see you here next week. Next week. We'll see you here next week. Seeking the truth. Seeking the truth. And until then, I hope that in everything you do, you're being guided by the truth and you're making an effort to seek it out. Hey, you like that? See how I like switched the phrase? I didn't end the same way. I could have ended by saying, and in all things, seek the truth. Seeking the truth. To seek the truth. I don't know. Okay, I'm just gonna end it. Oh gosh, seek the truth. To seek the truth.
Seek the truth. Seek the truth. Seek the truth. You're seeking the truth.
Seek the truth. And in the meantime, I hope you're. What are we saying here? Seeking the truth. That's right. Okay, I just like seriously forgot there for a second. I was like, was it finding? What does it do? Something with the truth? Okay, maybe waiting to go to the bathroom wasn't such a good idea. You're seeking the truth. Seeking the truth. Seek the truth. Seeking the truth. Are seeking the truth. Seek the truth. Seek the truth. Seek the truth. Seeking the truth. Seek the truth. You're seeking the truth. Keep seeking the truth. Seek the truth. Seek the truth. Seek the truth. Go ahead and seek the truth. 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 Spend some time seeking the truth. I obviously have nothing more to tell you, so you'd just as soon have this podcast be over, right? You'd rather I just kind of stop talking right now and do the usual thing where I kind of wrap things up and say, as I've already said, that I don't know what's coming next week, and then blah blah blah, and then something about seek the truth. And see, this is the part of the show again that always falls apart. So you know what? I just need to end the show with my special little tagline where I say something, something about your week, blah, blah, blah. Seek the truth. Seeking the truth. To seek the truth. He's seeking the truth. Seeking the truth. Seeking the truth. I'm seeking the truth. We'll be back in 2 weeks as always seeking the truth. And in the meantime, why don't you do the same? See how I kind of tried to vary it up there so I didn't actually end as if I have to end every single time by saying something about seek the truth. Seeking the truth. I've run out of stuff to say, so I gotta cut this off before I waste everyone's time. How much time did that waste? Time you'll never get back. Seeking the truth. 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 Blah, blah, blah. Seek the truth. Seeking the truth. Seeking the truth. I was trying to come up with a clever way to say that, but you know, it didn't work out. So, seek the truth. Until next week. And then who knows what's going to happen then. I mean, I sure don't. I got nothing planned. It's probably going to be a terrible, terrible show that you definitely do not want to listen to. You're just better off spending your time seeking the truth. Seek the truth. Seeking the truth. Seeking the truth. Seek the truth. Seeking 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 the truth. That's all we got. See you next time. In the meantime, why not spend I'm going to use, how many times am I going to use the word time? That's all we got this time. Have a good time. In the meantime, spend some time seeking the truth. Seeking the truth. Seek the truth. Seeking the truth. Seeking the truth.
There's nothing wrong with enjoying life. Don't get me wrong. There is nothing wrong with enjoying life. But the way we're going to find true fulfillment, true meaning in life, is by investing our time in seeking the truth.
Visit www.spiritblade.net. Peter is a crazy freak. Green Lantern is awesome. Visit www.spiritblade.net.